This is Angelo. I'm 17 years old and live in Beachview.
I'm Janyla and I'm 12 years old and I live in Pittsburgh.
This is Anna. I'm 17 years old and I live in Murrysville.
This is Rocco. I'm 13 years old and live in Southside. And this is the Kidsburg Podcast.
We have got a magical podcast for you today, and I mean that literally. Welcome to the Kidsburg Podcast. I'm Christine Sorensen with KDKA-TV, and I'm a Kidsburg partner.
And I'm Yuling Chang, director of Kidsburg.
And I'm Melissa Rayworth, the editor of our website, kidsburg.org. Based in Pittsburgh and offering parents everywhere a range of articles that help make it easier to raise kids from toddlers to teens.
And we should mention, we're all parents too, learning right along with you and your kids, who we hope will be listening with you.
In each episode, we're going to share what we're calling a Pittsburgh gem, a place that we think you may not have thought about going to with your kids. Today, it's how libraries are so much more than books.
We also want you to leave inspired, and we are certain you will be today when we talk with the incredibly inspiring Mr. Masato, a professional magician.
And if you've ever wished you could get inside the heads of teenagers, well, this is your chance when we ask teenagers questions on Tea with Teens. In this episode, we ask them, if you could create your own phone rules, what would those be?
All right, well, let's begin with our Pittsburgh gem, which is actually more than one place. It's libraries. Most of us probably remember going to the library as a place to check out books, maybe read, do homework, maybe meet friends. But let me tell you, if you haven't been to a library lately, they have changed. Many of them are now community hubs that offer free programming for people of all ages, particularly kids and families.
It's true, Christine. There is so much available at the Carnegie Libraries of Pittsburgh. And it's incredible how much libraries have changed since today's parents were kids. There are so many events, and we often write about these on Kidsburg. Free crafting workshops, mindfulness and meditation classes, board game gatherings, story time for younger kids, and even things like scavenger hunts. Many locations also have teen time, after-school gatherings where kids from grades 6 to 12 can play games, listen to music, hang out, and make new friends in the process. Another thing that I absolutely love about the Carnegie Libraries, people can actually borrow musical instruments. So if you have a child who's interested in learning to use a certain instrument, maybe you're not quite ready to rent one or buy one, they can take one out of the library. And this is really fun. You can either borrow on a CD or stream recordings that are minus one instrument. It's almost like karaoke for a kid who's learning an instrument. So if they borrow a certain instrument from the library, they can also borrow this music. And they can play along. And so instead of standing in their room alone playing the trumpet, they can play along with an entire orchestra.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. They also have homework help resources. They have computers and iPads available and robotics equipment so kids can explore STEM learning beyond what they're learning at school. And this is a favorite of my kids, along with books. You can borrow comics and graphic novels, and you can also stream movies and TV shows and music. It's really incredible, and I think for anybody in any community, it's worth going to visit your local library or, you know, in our case, going to the website carnegielibrary.org and finding out what is there that you might not have expected.
Yeah, and get on their email lists because they're always also telling you what's going on, and I know we're featuring it on kidsburg.org. I mean, it was like my lifesaver when I had my first child. I went as many times as I could with her to all the little baby and mommy and me classes and toddler time because it was such a great place to connect with other people in my community, and I'm still friends with some of those people today.
Oh, wow. And that's a great thing to know about, that even if you have a baby or toddlers, it's not like you have to worry, oh, they're going to make noise at the library. I can't bring the baby. They are totally welcome.
Mm-hmm. I always recommend to families, if you have a child who's like, oh, I'm sort of interested in this or that, go to the library, right? They most likely offer something in what that child might be interested in, and you can try it for free before you commit to something. It's so wonderful.
Yep. And you'll see events at libraries around the region in our events guide that we post every week at kidsburg.org. And we have a link to the Carnegie Library's website at kidsburg.org/podcast.
Pittsburgh is Kidsburg. You're listening to the Kidsburg Podcast.
Magic is a special art form. It's something that makes adults kids again, which is why it's such a great thing for kids and families to see together. You'll love our conversation with magician Mr. Masato, who you can see right here in Pittsburgh with your kids.
Joshua Masato started Masato Magic more than 20 years ago at Houdini's Magic Theater in Atlantic City, New Jersey. That's where he found his passion for performing and discovered the linking rings, which are now his signature effect. Masato rings are now a staple in the magic community. Joshua's career in magic has led to national and international television appearances and performances at the country's top theaters, including the Magic Castle in Hollywood, Chicago Magic Lounge, and Monday Night Magic in New York. And Pittsburgh audiences have been enjoying his frequent performances at Liberty Magic downtown. We have Joshua here with us today, and we are so excited to talk with Mr. Masato and learn a little bit about his incredible work. So, Mr. Masato, at Kidsburg, we talk to a lot of families and kids. And when we ask kids for a superpower that they would love to have, we often hear, I want to be able to do magic. So, Mr. Masato, you're a magician, and you have this superpower. Tell us, what is it like to be a magician, and what do you think about your superpower?
Wow, that's a wonderful question. My superpower. You know, everyone has their own superpower. My superpower is me. No one in the world can do what I do the way that I do it. No one in the world can do what you do the way that you do it, right? So we are unique in every shape, form, or fashion, you know? But more importantly, one of my other superpowers is I think I'm a little charming and a little funny at times. And I believe with every fiber of my being in whatever it is that I do. So I really believe that that in itself is a superpower.
That's incredible, because I think for kids, having that confidence is so hard to come by, and knowing who you are and what your superpower is. I'm curious, can you tell me your journey as to how you became a magician and how you built that confidence and knowing who you are and developing that superpower?
Well, it wasn't an easy task. You know, I've grown over the years and I'm continuing to grow. What do they say? How's that old saying? Practice makes what?
Practice makes perfect.
Perfect, yeah. My grandmother taught me something different, though. She said, no. Practice makes improvement. You know why? Because you can always better your best. We always can achieve a higher level. You know, so I always kept that mindset with me as I went on. When I was a small child, maybe 8 years old or so, my grandmother said to me, Josh, do you want to watch Michael Jackson's Moonwalker? And I said, oh, yeah, absolutely. And she said, well, also, wait a minute. Also, tonight at 9 o'clock on ABC, there's David Copperfield live at the Bermuda Triangle. She said, which one do you want to see? I said, oh, that's easy. I want to see both. She said, well, honey, you can't. I said, whatever shall I do? And Grandma said to me, sometimes in life, we have to make choices. And that was a tough choice for a small kid my age. You know, I was torn between my two loves of music and magic, and I think we all know the choice I made. Magic, or should I say, magic chose me. As I got a bit older, maybe to when I was about 18 years old, right? I got my first credit card. It was a Visa Classic, right? I had a $100 limit. No job, right? $100 on a credit card, and that was it, right? So you remember back when TV used to go off the air, right? Okay. So for the kids out there, if you're listening, if you saw the American flag on the screen late at night, then that means TV was going off till 6 a.m., yeah? If you got lucky, there was one thing left on television late at night, infomercials, right? So one night I saw Larry Anderson's Jaw Droppers. This guy was selling all these amazing magic tricks, right? So I ran to the phone, and I called, and I placed the order, right? It finally came, and inside the package was magical boxes. They were called VHS tapes, right? So I put them in the VCR and I practiced and improved. And I got so good at some of the magic there, you know, I decided to go out and try to perform it for my friends. So my friend said, hey, let's go over to Tropicana. And I saw a magic shop, Houdini's, out the corner of my eye. It was a blinking light. And I turned and I looked and it said, magic shows, $3. I walked inside, I looked in my pocket, and I pulled out $3. I said, wow, three, that's the magic number. And I walked in, and I gave them the $3, and I said, I want to see the magic show. So I stayed, and I watched the show. And they said, hey, you want to stay for the next one? I said, sure. They had one every hour. I stayed and watched four shows that day. And they said, dude, you must really love magic. I said, yeah, I do. And he said, do you know any tricks? I said, as a matter of fact, I know a couple. So I showed them the tricks that I learned from that video, right? And 30 days later, they gave me an audition at the magic shop. And I was already a great salesman, So I had a sales background. So I started selling magic. And they had a small close-up theater that seated maybe 21 people. And I started doing magic shows every day, 7 days a week. And I was horrible. No, yeah. I was horrible. I was a mess.
Well, you were good enough to get the job.
I was good enough to get the job, but it's a big difference in knowing how to perform a show versus doing a couple magic tricks here and there, right? So I got the job, and I started to perform, working the shows. Finally, something clicked in me. That was the beginning of how I got started in magic. And I used to drive from Philadelphia all the way to Atlantic City daily. I used to sleep in the back of the magic shop sometimes because it was so such a long drive at night, you know, and I had to be at work early in the morning. So I sacrificed, you know, and there were times when people didn't believe in my vision. And I've learned over the years, just because someone doesn't understand or see your vision, you know, it's okay because it wasn't for them to see, it's for you to see, right? I've found my people that helped me along the way, right, and I couldn't have done it without them. Like my wife. Well, I wouldn't have been able to be here to speak to you right now if it wasn't for her.
You got to put in the effort every day. And some days it's not going to be as much fun as you'd like it to be, but you just stick with it and good things end up happening because we're not going to be brilliant at everything the first time we try to do it. We got to put that time in. So well, we would love to hear, what is your favorite magic trick? I know you're famous for the rings and that might be your favorite, but what is your favorite kind of magic trick?
You already said it. I don't know if you know, but it's called Masato rings. Like,
wow. Yeah, all right. So show us. I wish the audience could see what we can
I'll
see.
Show
but
you.
Love to,
I'll show you right
love
now.
Love to know about
you
it.
Know, what I have here are four separate and solid rings. I'll count them off. That's one, two, three, four. Separate and solid rings. And watch close. And one, two. And that's three.
They are completely solid, and he just tapped two of them together, and suddenly they're linked together. One is inside the other. And I am sitting like a few inches away from him, and I have no idea how this happened other than magic.
And they're solid. Like, there's no like little clip
no,
in there. There's
nothing.
No secret thing.
Now, as easily as they go together, they come apart.
Oh, my God.
Even easier. You didn't hear a click because there was no sound. Yeah. Hold on to the ring. Hold on to it with both hands, arms out towards me, closer. That's good. Watch, and then one, two, three.
Oh my God. He did it again. They were separate, and I was holding one of them, and now they're together, and I have no idea how this is possible. It's completely solid. And now they're all connected.
Well, almost. Three of them are connected.
Yep.
Well, actually, there's one up top, two in the middle, and one on the bottom. And you'll see the bottom one jump up and link without touching.
That was absolutely incredible.
Amazing.
Thank you so much.
How did you develop that? How did you even figure out Masato's rings?
To be honest, I have no idea. It came to me. I wanted to do something that no one else was doing or no one else was thinking about. This trick came in every magic kit. You can get it for a buck or $2. No one cared about it. It was a classic in magic, but somewhat forgotten. And when I was working at the magic shop, I would stand out front because it made the noise that it could attract customers. So I would stand out every day, almost 8 hours a day doing this trick. And I would catch the attention of passersby. And they would come in and I would sell them magic tricks and teach them magic tricks, right? And I got kind of good at it. You know, I didn't think anything of it, you know, but other people noticed. And they said, hey. Like, wow, do that again? Oh, wow, did you see this move? And they would call their friends over, and everyone would watch. Then I started getting invited to magic conventions. And they said, hey, they would introduce me. Oh, you should see his rings. And I would start to perform for him. My good friend, in fact, my best friend, a guy named Eric Jones, right? He was the first magician to perform at Liberty Magic, downtown Pittsburgh, right? Eric invited me out one day. And he said, hey, why don't you come down and hang out with us? I'm in your city. We're filming a couple of magicians. If you ever wondered how magicians learn how to do magic tricks, it's from people like Eric and myself. So at the time, no one knew who I was, and he invited me out. And I came down to the hotel, and when they were filming, they took a break. And he said, hey, Josh, do that thing you do with the rings. So I started to perform. Next thing you know, he said, okay, that's enough. It was 10 seconds. That was it. Just 10. And they took that video, put some music to it, sent it to the CEO of the company, and later on that night, my phone rings. I have no idea who it is, so I don't answer. Right? The phone rang again. I looked. I said, you won't catch me, bill collector. I have no idea who it is. Right? And next thing I know, I get a notification on my laptop, and I open it up, and it's an email, and the email says, pick up your phone. So I answer the phone, and it turns out that it is the CEO of one of the largest magic companies in the world. And he says, hey, we saw a video of you, and we'd love to sign you, right? So long story short, I take the deal, and next thing I know, I find myself in Las Vegas at one of the largest magic conventions in the world, right? And I'm the new kid on the block, and nobody knows me. So I'm performing. I'm trying to sell magic. A guy walks up. I have no idea who he is, and he says, let me see what you got, kid. And I start to perform for him. And he calls over a couple other magicians and says to them, guys, when was the last time you were fooled by a 3,000-year-old magic trick? And he handed me his business card, and he said, tonight at 11, it's a party. You'll want to be there. Don't miss it. So later on that night, I'm up in my hotel, and my assistant says to me, hey, are we going to that party? I said, probably not. We got to sell magic in the morning. And he said, well, the guy said you don't want to miss it. All right, come on, let's go. So I get suited and booted and head downstairs to the front of the hotel, and there is a chauffeur, right, out front in a limousine holding a sign that said Masato. I'm like, I'm Masato. And we got inside, and we drove to this beautiful mansion. There were a bunch of people standing out front. And I walk inside, and the guy who invited me said, hey, you made it. This is great. Tell me, did Dave see your trick? And I'm like, Dave who? And he's like, David Copperfield. And I'm like, no, why would David Copperfield have seen my trick? He said, because you're at his house. Would you mind doing it for him? Yeah, I'll do it for him. Absolutely. Where is he? Where is he at? So, yeah, we all piled everybody outside, and turns out he was right out front. I walked right past him. Didn't even realize. Just a couple days prior, I was in the mean streets of North Philadelphia and everything that goes along with it. Now, I'm in front of the person who inspired me to be the best version of myself, right? Mm. And it was absolutely phenomenal. I shake his hand. I say, sir, you're the reason. Thank you so much. And without further ado, let's begin. And I start to perform for him. And I hit every move with clarity and precision. I mean, the ring gods were shining down on me that night. It couldn't have gone any better. I get not one, but two rounds of applause. And the coolest thing of all he said was, I'm a fan, right? And I was blown away. And that was like the greatest night of my magic career. And I knew I was fulfilling my purpose and what I'm supposed to do. And now, some years later, I find myself in Pittsburgh. Liberty Magic and the Pittsburgh Cultural Trust reached out to me and said, hey, we would like to start our family programming, and wondered if you or someone you know would like to be a part of it. I said, someone I know? Me? Yeah, I want to do it, right? And here's the thing, right? Mr. Rogers is from Pittsburgh, right? I get to go to Pittsburgh to do family programming. I'm like, I want to be the new Mr. Rogers, right? And now I know that's a big shoes to fill, you know, but you got to start somewhere, right?
And one of the pieces of advice he always used to give is do what you love in front of kids. Show kids that you can love what you do every day, and they will find their love for what they want to do every day. And I've always found that inspiring, and I try to think about that for myself. And I'm curious, you know, what advice do you have for parents in supporting their kids' passion? You know, you talked about believing in yourself. You talked about mentors. You've talked about inspiration. Practice makes improvements. What would you say to parents?
Well, you kind of stole what I would have said to parents, okay? So that's very good, though. That's very
good. I was listening.
That's very good, right? So what I would suggest, and I try to hold on to the moments that I remember from my childhood, you know, and I wondered where I would be in life today had my parents had the opportunity to nurture some of the things that I do today, right? So I would say pay close attention to what your child loves, right? Whatever you see that captures their interests, totally, right? Find mentors who can help them build that skill, whatever it may be, you know, because grandma used to tell me, if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life, right? So I haven't worked in decades, you know, because it's very fulfilling what I do. I get that. I walk into work, right? Everybody claps, right? I leave work, everybody claps, right? They stand up most of the time, right? And they'll clap too, right? You know, so it's a pretty good job to have, you know. It's not even a job or a career. It's a way of life.
Yeah, and I love that idea of finding mentors, because maybe you have a child who wants to do something you're not experienced sure. doing, but there's somebody in the community that they can hang out with and they can learn from. And yeah, we can all keep an eye out for that. So another question for parents and kids. So you have performed all around the globe. You get up in front of audiences all the time, and that takes some courage and some confidence. A lot of kids get nervous if they have to give a book report or a presentation in their class. What advice would you have for kids who might need to or want to do something that's a little bit out of their comfort zone?
If you feel discomfort, it's okay, all right? Grandma used to say, pain is weakness leaving the body, right? You know, so if you feel like something's uncomfortable, in actuality, that's a good thing because that means you're growing. You have to take the good with the bad, you know. It's like two sides of a coin. You know, you can't have one without the other. You can't have the good without the bad. So believe that you're going to be just fine. In fact, we all make mistakes, and we have to. That's how we learn. You never give up. Fear is something that doesn't even really exist. It's in your mind. It's usually something that's going to happen in the future or could possibly happen in the future, right? But there's a chance that it'll never actually happen. For my example, I have to go in front of large crowds of people, right? Have I ever been nervous? Sure. I don't want to disappoint the people. But once I'm on stage, I'm okay. But when I first started the show, I was a little nervous because I wrote this new show. I have no idea how people are going to receive it. Hopefully, I've given everything from my heart. And maybe, just maybe, maybe they won't like it. I doubted myself, right? That's fear, right? You have to dispel fear. It's a part of life, right? But you have to learn to work with it and learn to deal with it, right? So if you go out, whatever it is, and you're a little uncomfortable, that's okay, right? Because you'll get through it. Number one, you got to show up, right? You gotta take action with the opportunities, right? And when you take action with those opportunities, 9 times out of 10, you'll win.
Right, you're pursuing your passion, you do what you love, but you're also, you have a business, people look up to you. What are the most important skills for kids to have when they're an entrepreneur or building their own company, business, anything they want to do?
Show up every day. Every day is not going to be an amazing day, and that's okay. In the beginning, everything's going to be tough. But every day that you spend on your business, it will truly help you in the long run because you will gain experience, and experience is priceless. So never give up. Even if you sit back and you take 10 minutes to learn something new that's going to help your business in the long run, that's better than sitting at home watching Netflix. So give it your all. Learn as much as you can from the people in the past who have done what you already do or what you're trying to do. One of the most important things, learn from their mistakes. It makes things so much easier. So that's what I would suggest.
Thank you so much for being here with us. We're so excited to let families know that they can go downtown and see your show. And we love that you gave them some of this insight in our episode today. So thanks for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Wow, I loved his stories. That was incredible. I grew up with magic in my house because my dad's an amateur magician, so I have a special fondness for this. But what I really loved is how he said to pay close attention to what a child loves and then find mentors to help them figure out how can they turn that into a lifelong career, right? Because I know we all know if you do what you love, it doesn't feel like a job.
Well, and I love that he said, if you're passionate about it, just become the best version of that you can and always be ready. You never know what the next thing might be that'll come along your path. So just do it and do it with gusto.
Yeah, it's true. And I think for kids and adults to realize, like you said, we don't need to close any doors to ourselves. I mean, if you love something, you believe that you can keep on, if you'll put in the work, getting better and better at it. You don't have to decide that you can only go so far. If you're a magician, you may end up at David Copperfield's house. I mean, you can operate in all of those worlds. They're not closed to you.
And we have a link to Liberty Magic where you can find Mr. Masato as well as his personal website at kidsburg.org/podcast.
You're listening to the Kidsburg Podcast. Pittsburgh is Kidsburg.
Smartphones can be a great tool to connect people and learn new things, maybe even learn magic, but they can also be the bane of a parent's existence. So we wanted to know from teenagers, given that they're often telling their parents that they should have access to their phones whenever they want them, if you had kids, what kind of phone rules would you put in place? So here's what the students at SLB Radio Youth Media Center found from their peers when they discussed this subject.
You get a phone at like 9 years old, it's not gonna be like one of the best phones. It's gonna be like appropriate, it'll fit you.
I did not get a phone until I was 12 years old. So I think that's actually like good. I feel like it kind of sucks in the moment, but I think it was really good because I learned like how to leave my phone and not be on it all the time. But it does suck because when you're in school and everybody else has a phone, it like is very different and people make fun of you and that's not very fun, but I think it was really good. I think I would still do that for my child.
If I had kids and I was to implement phone rules, I would set them like not harshly, because for a period of time when I first got my phone at 14, my parents were very strict with my phone and I didn't do much of it. But they only got it for me because I started leaving the house, so that's the only reason I needed it. And I think that's a good idea because you don't want them to get addicted. They're already addicted to screens. So unless they need it, I don't think parents should give them their phones, or I wouldn't.
Some kids be getting their phones at like 7 or like 12 or something. I'd be like, nah, that's too young. So I would feel like they should get a phone like probably 14, 15. Give them time limits on how long they could be on the phone at night, because there's definitely predators, like predators online, to try to get your kids or anything like that.
I think they need their phones by 8 or 9, because by then they'll be going to school by themselves, or I'd be driving them walking home. Or if they're going home by themselves or going to the library or whatever, they need a phone to contact me. And also just for fun purposes.
So we've got one more podcast episode coming up in our spring series. Don't miss it when it drops next week. Subscribe and you'll be the first to get it.
And be sure to check out kidsburg.org and get our free weekly e-newsletter so you know about all the amazing things happening in the Pittsburgh community, as well as stories about inspiring people and more tea with teens.
Thank you for being part of the Kidsburg podcast. And let us know on our Kidsburg Facebook page what you think of it and if you have any suggestions. We'll see you next time.
This is Felix. I'm 14 years old and I live in Allegheny Commons, and this is the Kidsburg Podcast.
Don't miss our next Kidsburg Podcast when we talk with astronaut Mike Fink, who's from Pittsburgh and has spent more time in space than all but one other astronaut. Plus, we take you to a hidden gem, the Allegheny River Trail Park. It used to be called Aspinwall Riverfront Park, but so much more than a park. And we ask teenagers, what kind of jobs would you like to job shadow? Until then, we hope you'll visit kidsburg.org for resources on the places, people, and ideas that will help you raise kids. And subscribe to Kidsburg's free weekly e-newsletter at kidsburg.org.